And on this particular Sunday, we're reminded of the transfiguration of Christ through the readings, which kind of sounds a bit odd, especially to someone like me coming from the Church of England, where the transfiguration takes place on the 6th of August. And so I was rather confused by the whole concept. But as Father Lewis reminded me, this is a time where Mark directly makes us look from the transfiguration to the cross of Christ and then the resurrection. So there's a whole pattern involved in this. And the collect, if I'd have taken the time to read it, tells us why we're here. O God, who before the passion of your only begotten Son revealed his glory on the holy mountain, grant to us that, beholding by faith the light of his countenance, may be strengthened to bear our cross and be changed into his likeness from glory to glory. It's all in there. And it makes today's day perfect for a baptism. Peter, when he was observing what's going on, was completely awestruck. And this really was a mountaintop experience to beat all other mountaintop experiences. He was there and Jesus suddenly transformed himself, transfigured into this incredible whiteness that was beyond all compare. And they were terrified. They didn't know what was happening. At the same time appeared two of the greatest prophets ever, two of the greatest people in Judaism. And Jesus was conversing with them. And Peter, wanting to keep hold of this moment in the same way that Mary Magdalene wanted to keep a hold of Jesus when she saw him resurrected, had this incredibly good idea. Jesus, let me make booths, little homes, tents, as they did back in the day when the Israelites were wandering the desert and thought they had the presence of God in there or met God within that tent, and we can keep this going on forever. But as soon as the words were spoken and were released to the air, boom, everything went back to normal. And Jesus warned them not to say anything until after the Son of Man be resurrected from the dead, which must have meant absolutely nothing to them. We're like that. We want to hold on to things. But for those of you who are old enough, because there are some here who probably won't know what I'm talking about in this phrase, St. Peter wanted a Kodak moment. He wanted to put it on film. Or it's kind of not a selfie, the opposite. It's just a photo of your cell phone that just kind of makes it solid and puts it in frame, and it's a memory that you will hold forever. But Jesus and God didn't want that to happen. He wanted the disciples to move forward and become the light itself, as our collect reminds us. And so here we are today, and we are creating a new Christian. The baby will be baptized in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit with the sprinkling of water, anointed, and a candle will be lit to show that she's become part of the light of God. And it's really intriguing to understand just what is happening within this sacrament. And of course, we all know, because we're all really good Episcopalians, that a sacrament is an outward and visible sign for an inward and spiritual grace. We all know that, don't we? Yes, yes. But so many people disagree. I remember writing a paper on baptism, and it came back with a mark. It was externally marked, and I got a gamma. I got a G, which in Greek is, that's in Greek, and it's a C, basically. Now, I'm pretty normally happy with a C. It wasn't a fail, hey, you know. But I was a bit kind of about this, because I thought it was worth a bit more than a C, so I asked for it to be remarked by another moderator. And it turned out the problem was not my paper, but the person who read it in the first place, who was of a certain Protestant persuasion who didn't believe in infant baptism. So everything that I wrote to do with supporting infant baptism got the big red line treatment, which dropped its mark further and further down the scale. Well, the second time it was read by somebody who was more of an independent mind and could see that what I was writing had historical precedence and that it was, you know, it could be disputed, but it wasn't inaccurate. So it got bumped up. Everyone was happy, perhaps. Why am I saying this? Well, because the other day, while I was just Googling around things, I came across a website that is basically why infant baptism should not be done. And it makes all these cases about the child isn't old enough to understand the promises that are going to be made, and the child cannot respond in making a personal confession of Jesus Christ. Well, it's a sacrament. It is God who does the work, not the individual. And there are scriptures which are very tantalizing that tell us that, say, when the head of the household becomes a member of the faith, then that in some way sanctifies the rest of the family, including the servants and the slaves. Now, I'm not for one minute thinking that just because dad or mom has been baptized, everyone's suddenly guaranteed to go to heaven and they don't need to go through baptism and live a Christian life. What I think it suggests is that if mom and or dad, preferably both, are Christians, and then they bring their child to Christ, who then undergoes the sacrament of baptism, and then God works within that child, somehow the parent's Christian faith makes its mark on the child. Now, to me that sounds really reasonable. Because I would expect that if mom and dad were Satanists, for instance, and they had children, then it's kind of likely that they would be influenced, the child would be influenced by their parents' beliefs. Same with if the parents are atheists. They would be brought up within an atmosphere of the belief in no God. So the expectation here is that the parents are involved in the spiritual raising of the child as well as the physical raising of the child. As part of our ceremony for baptism, it includes the whole household of believers. Everyone here promises to take part in bringing this child up as a Christian, to raise them in the faith. So the parents and godparents aren't on their own. There's a whole community of believers into which this child, we hope, will be raised. So the stress there is on the faith of everyone else around the child. And this makes perfect sense of our calling. That we, beholding by faith the light of his, Jesus' countenance, may be strengthened to bear our cross and be changed into his likeness. You can really reduce the Christian faith into two little maxims. Jesus is Lord, and we change into his likeness. We don't remain who we are, that we become more of who God wishes to be by growing into who Christ is, to understanding him. And in today's gospel, we hear the voice of God saying to the disciples, "This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him." Peter didn't want to listen. He wanted that Kodak moment to freeze everything for all time and just kind of bask in this experience. But we are called to listen. Do you remember when Jesus was invited by his mom to do the first miracle, the marriage of Cana? He really didn't want to do it. But Mary insisted, and she said to the servants, "Listen to him." In other words, do as he says. So when he said, "Get the biggest pitchers you've got lying around and fill them to the brim with water," that's exactly what they did. So when God tells us to listen to him, is to do what he says. And we are told that we are to baptize. We are told we are to preach the good news. We are told to bring bread and wine and share them in memory of Christ, believing what he tells us when he says, "This is my body, this is my blood." So here we are tomorrow, we're doing all three. The other side of today is that it's World Mission Sunday. And when we think of mission, we always think of those outlying posts in the world where we send people who have never heard the gospel and they need to hear it. There's the imperative that we share the gospel, bring the light of Christ to the people, and we think they're wonderful people, and they are. But we tend to forget our part in that mission. That we are also called to be missioners to where we are. The people we meet at work or in the stores or our family and friends, to be that light of Christ. Sometimes bearing our crosses because it costs us something. And this is something we promise if we're adults being baptized, but we will be promising again as we renew our baptismal vows, that we promise to do all these things, to seek those places where injustice reigns and change it so justice comes to the fore, to seek the poor, the lonely, the lost, the widowed, the orphaned, and to bring Christ to them through us. And it all starts here with a little bit of water, but a whole heap of faith, knowing that it is God who does the work, not us.